Hello, folks, and welcome back to the Indaba Conversation with Chris here on the Indaba Africa channel. Chris Wyatt reporting here. This is Chris in Central Pennsylvania with a topic that I frequently discuss and I've been alerting people to for a number of years, but we've never actually had a guest on the program who was a survivor of a farm attack. We have had members of our audience and moderators who've been survived farm attacks, but never discussed them on air. It's understandable that it's a traumatic and difficult experience for people to deal with. Today, my guest is Schnee Wolfswinkel. Schnee, hochandit.
Hi, good day, Chris.
I'm well, thank you very much. Bye-bye, donkey. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Well, welcome to the program. And you're very welcome. I should let the audience know that you're on the program because you requested to come on. I don't know where you first became aware of my program, what I do, but I know that you first came in contact with me and reached out to me over TikTok of all places.
Yes. Because I saw all of your TikTok videos and I'm like, okay, I need to get in contact with you.
Yeah, it's it's a topic that I don't know what you know my background, but I was an intelligence officer in the Army. And when I worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency in particular, I reported on farm and rural insecurity, farm murders, and what was happening in South Africa in general. And so once I left active service, this is a topic that doesn't go away. And it's a topic that concerns me about all South Africans. It's particularly horrific and egregious what's happening with rural insecurity and how vulnerable people are in South Africa. And in the case of your brother who was murdered in 2015, that's Gavin Wolfswinkel, correct?
Yes, it is. Yes, he was murdered alongside his friend Lucky Satome.
That's what I was going to ask. His friend Lucky, who tried to come out and I believe tried to defend him, was also murdered.
Help him. Yes,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, horrific. And we should point out for the racist and the race hustlers out there that Lucky is not a white guy. He was a black South African.
No, he's black. He's a black man. Yes.
And they killed him.
And he was my brother's friend. Yes.
Killed him with just as little concern for his life as they did for Gavin, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah.
So looking at where this is at, if I'm not mistaken, this is in Gauteng. Is that where it occurred?
And in Pretoria.
Pretoria East.
Pretoria East, Boskop.
Yeah, Boskop. Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that's particularly identified as an area, but I know Boskop Road. I know the road. So is that centered around the road there?
It's around there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, welcome to the program, folks. If this is a difficult subject for you, I understand you have to depart at some point. No need to pretend you're in an airport and say you're departing. Just if it gets too much, just go ahead and leave the chat, but you're welcome to stay and you're welcome to ask questions as we go along. I'll do my best to incorporate your questions, but I'm just going to give Schnee a chance to talk and I'll ask interrogative questions because my viewers who watch my program regularly know that usually when I have a guest on, I pretty much know the answers to most questions I'm going to ask. And there's a reason I go in a certain direction. And in your case, we haven't really talked about this ahead of time, other than an opportunity for you to discuss this. And it's the first time I've had a guest on who's going to talk about this. Now, I don't know, were you there or around, or are you a survivor because someone in your family was murdered on a farm?
I'm a survivor because someone in my family was murdered.
That's legitimate. That's why I just want to make sure that's clear, because I mean, actually, one of my moderators was actually on her dairy farm when they attacked and she was nearly killed along with her kids and her partner. But so it's important for us to understand. But Schnee, can you take us back a little bit here? This is already almost a decade ago that Gavin's life was prematurely taken from him. How old would he be today if he were still surviving?
Gavin would have celebrated his 40th birthday now on the 18th of June.
Ah, damn.
Yeah, it was a very sad day for us.
Can you take us back to what happened? Was he working? Was it a residence, a farm? And you don't have to run through all the details of what happened, but he was shot and murdered in 2015, correct?
Yes. It was a Sunday evening. Lucky went away for the weekend. Him and his fiance, Gavin and his fiance, they went to the wedding venue to finalize the last details of their wedding. They were 2 weeks shy from getting married, finalized everything. About 7 o'clock, Gavin went to pick up Lucky again after his visit with his family. And they got back to the farm. Gavin and his fiance started making food. They heard the alarm go off. What happened quite frequently there. Nadia even went out of the house to stop the alarm and see what's going on. So they felt quite safe there. And when the alarm went off at 7:45 Sunday evening, Gavin went out and he bumped into this guy on the farm and they started fighting. And unfortunately, Nadia saw everything. And she heard a shot. She looked and she just saw my brother on the ground. And when that happened, Lucky came out and they shot Lucky.
And
Just
killed
like
him,
that.
and killed him as well.
Yes, they were dead on the scene. It was immediately.
Now,
it was
was
execution style, yes.
Was there an attempted robbery or anything after this, or did they flee after they murdered
no,
both of them?
They fled. Okay. No, they fled.
So Nadia was, while it was horrific and traumatic for her, she wasn't ever assaulted. They never went into the residence.
Luckily not, because she called all the farmers surrounding them to come and help. There's a shooting on the farm and everything, and she made alarm and everything, so they ran away. I don't think they came to steal anything. It was just to take lives.
Well, as we know in South Africa, the incredibly effective forensic service they have, the very efficient South African police service, and the ever hyper-vigilant criminal justice system that prosecutes people who commit crimes. So I figure that the people involved in this were long ago arrested and have been incarcerated for life at this point. Is that correct?
No.
Well, obviously, I'm being sarcastic.
Exactly. Exactly. Unfortunately, life in South Africa is 25 years.
Yeah, that's something people need to remember too. These people get out. Or if you claim it was all politically motivated, if you match the right demographics, you get out after murdering Amy Beal just 3.5 years later, after bludgeoning a young blonde-haired, blue-eyed American girl who was helping women of color in the Cape Flats, bludgeoned to death. They got 3.5 years, and then her mother forgave them and did a foundation, and they're all part of that. Isn't it lovely? Kumbaya. And to this day, we still have not got accountability for Edward Neumeister in KwaZulu-Natal. We've not gotten accountability for Brendan Horner in
Brendan
the Free
Horner
State.
As well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have not got accountability for Gavin Wolfswinkel.
Nothing. Nothing.
So Sinead, when did you first find out about it? I don't mean to take you back to a traumatic moment, but I'm sure this has gone through your head thousands of times since 2015.
Oh, yeah. I'm living it every day.
Yeah, it doesn't go away.
I've
So
been working,
go
because
ahead.
I've been working with this case for about almost 8 years now since Gavin has been murdered. So I went to bed early because I was tired, because I live in Cape Town, and this happened in Gauteng. I went to bed early and took a sleeping tablet because insomniac here. And I was just almost asleep. And my husband ran into the room and he's asked me, "Where's my daughter? Where's my daughter?" And I'm like, "Well, she's probably in her room. What's going on?" He said, "Just stay here." And he went and he got my daughter, and he brought her to our room, and he said something terrible happened. And I thought it was my dad, because I mean, my dad's not that old, but you don't think it's your little brother or my older brother. And I said, "Okay, what happened? What's going on?" And he said something terrible. Gavin was shot. I'm like, "What?" He said, "Yes." I'm like, "Okay, what's going on now?" And my daughter started crying, and he just said, "But he's dead." And I'm like, "What? No, you're lying." And he said, "But your mom tried to phone you." And my phone was on silent. That night, my phone was on silent. And I phoned my mom, and just when she picked up that phone, in her voice, I could hear, "Okay, this is real. This is not my sleeping tablet. This is real." And I said to her, "Okay, where's my dad and where's my older brother?" And she said to me, "They are on the farm right now." And I phoned my older brother, and this is the sad part. I could hear my dad screaming in the background, "Please God, just give me my son back and take my life." And I screamed to my older brother and I said to him, "Just give that child mouth to mouth, help him. Just help him, please. What's going on there? Just give him mouth to mouth." And he said to me, "Shanae, he is dead." And it was horrific, because you don't have answers. You don't know what's going on. It's everything is so shuffled and everything is so vague, but it comes back to you. The following day, my daughter was writing exams. We had to go to the school to organize that she can not go back to school. We have to leave now for Gauteng. Instead of going for his wedding, we had to go for his funeral. And on our way to Gauteng, his best friend phoned me and she said to me, listen, there's pictures of Gavin on Facebook. And I said to her, what pictures? And she said, I don't want to give you the page name, but there is pictures. I said to her, give me the page name. And that's the first picture I ever saw of my brother lying dead on the ground, that his neighbor took a picture of my brother laying dead on the ground and posted it on Facebook.
Wow, what a classless individual.
I phoned the police and I said to him, listen, this is what happened now. This is the guy's name. No, they're going to go out and talk to him to take it off, everything. And then they phoned me back and they said, oh, they can't get hold of him. They can't find him. It took me 5 minutes to find this guy.
Yeah. So,
how can I find someone in five minutes?
Well, because the police are not really there to protect South Africans. That's not the real world. They're there to disguise what's going on. So the ANC.
No, but the bad part is the police was involved in this four murder.
Well, that's something I'm not aware of. Let's get into that here shortly. But before we go any further, by the time you were contacted, I'd imagine it wasn't immediate. I mean, there had to be a response to the farm. Nadi was there. She's probably calling for help. She's, I would imagine, distraught, and I would expect emotional. I mean, having seen death occur right in front of me, it's definitely not something easy, even if you're accustomed to it. But so it was probably a matter of time. Was it at least a few hours later before they called you and your husband came in and woke you up, or as you were drifting off? That it was. So, I mean, the reason I mention is that your first response was a natural human response for a loved one. Is like, just give the boy, mouth to mouth.
Yeah. Mouth to mouth, help him.
But he had obviously already been dead for some time and there was no hope. But you don't know that. You're just trying to respond in a human way.
Well, the farmers that was there, that Nadia called over the radios, they were there before the police. It took the police half an hour to get there. And they live 4 kilometers from the farm. The paramedics were there before the police. But the sad part is everyone walked that crime scene and they contaminated everything. It's crazy if you see what I have. Nothing, they didn't do anything, the police. The knife that Gavin had, the shambok that Gavin and Lucky had, that wasn't collected as evidence. It was terrible. They just picked up everything. It was ridiculous. My mom got the call from the guy Gavin was renting the farm from about half an hour after it happened. And my mom went and she woke up my dad and she told my dad, and my dad he couldn't believe it. He was like, no, this is a lie. There's something wrong here. And then she phoned my brother, and my brother was there because they live close by. And they went to the farm. So after that, after she phoned my brother, she phoned me, but obviously my phone was on silent. So it was about 45 minutes after it happened that I found out.
It is shocking. And if you look at, for folks who are wondering, over her shoulder, over Sinead's shoulder, you can see a portrait of Gavin right there. He was a good looking fellow. And I mean that in a heterosexual fashion, but he was a good looking fellow. He's a little follically challenged, I believe, on top, but.
No, he shaved his head.
Oh, he shaved his head. Okay. Cause I was going to say he's one of those guys that actually look good bald. You know, some guys look good. I'm not one of them. I've had a bald head when I was in the army, when it was shaven. Not very good. So he's a very good looking fellow, and it's beyond the personal tragedy. It's such a shame. So you found out about 45 minutes later. We'll come back to that part about the police, but at some point you became yourself involved, or someone else did, in hiring private investigators. Was that because there was no movement on the case, or you didn't trust the police, or who started the getting private investigators involved, and why?
Nadia's dad, he has a friend that introduced my family to the private investigator. And one day I just phoned Boshkop Police Station and asked them, listen, I just want to know what's going on with this double murder. Gave them the case number, everything. And the captain of Boshkop Police Station said to me, I'm crazy. There was no double homicide. I'm crazy.
Okay, it was your
And I said,
brother.
it's in all the newspapers. You guys are all commentating on it and giving statements to the media. How am I the crazy one?
It's incredible disrespect for those who are bereaving. That's also, well, I'd like to say it's shocking, but it's not shocking. We're
it's
talking
not.
About SAPs. It's not. And and here, Sinead, this is important, I think, and I suspect you'll agree with me because Lucky was his friend. They were friends.
Yeah,
they were friends. I mean, black and white South African, they were friends. They were mates. They got along. Both murdered in cold blood and nothing was stolen. You know, I tell this story over and over again about how, and I apologize if this is graphic for some of the viewers. I'm not going to describe in great detail, but I'm going to tell you that we have cases of people with body armor, cell phone jammers, caught on CCTV using wire cutters and police issue sidearms, breaking into farms and homes, murdering farm managers, torturing mothers and fathers, gang raping fathers and mothers, and then boiling their children in tubs and electrocuting them and things like this, cutting genitals off. People think this is just some fantastic made up tale. And these are places where oftentimes there's been no robbery. And if there is a robbery, usually it's just something at convenience. They grab whatever cash is laying around just because it's there after they've accomplished their domestic terrorist goal. And then they take the mobile phone and they take the bucky if there's one there just to escape. And they usually burn or abandon the bucky. We saw that with the family in the Western Cape and the Northern Cape, what happened to them. I mean, this is another instance where there was nothing stolen except life.
Life, the most precious thing, life.
Yeah, the most precious commodity. And again, as I've done for a long time now, Sinead, I don't know if you know, I came under a lot of criticism a couple of years ago when I first started broadcasting because there were people using the term white genocide and the whites are targeted. And I said, well, yes, a lot of white South Africans are targeted, but not necessarily because they're white. There are isolated cases of that, but it's usually because they're vulnerable, they're isolated, they're remote, and there's no response, there's no defense. And the presumption is they have resources, money, phones, TVs, guns, things like that, and vehicles. But it's not just white South Africans that are murdered. In the case we see here, Lucky was murdered. We've seen the Indian 4-month pregnant mother, her throat slit on the Ayub farm. We have seen black cattle farmers in the Free State shot in the head and left for dead. This is something that is affecting all rural South Africans, and especially those living on farms. They are targets. It's open season because the incompetent, inept, and corrupt criminal justice system and police system. Do you think that's a fair statement on my part?
It is 100% fair and true. And don't forget our corrupt government, our corrupt president, our corrupt minister of police. He's actually a joke himself.
Well, it's important to understand that he's not the garden boy. Okay.
Shut up.
Exactly. I'll try to get a little bit of lighthearted moment in there that just for a second. It's a difficult
and don't
subject.
Forget Julius Malema,
nah? I haven't forgot Juju. You know, it's I watched him. I covered the events live at Senate Hall on the second time. I covered the first event when people responded to the hearing for the accused murderers of Brendan Horner were really just scapegoats, it looks like. They weren't any involved. One of them's a very serious criminal, but he wasn't involved in that apparently, but they were scapegoats. But at the first event, when the vehicle was turned over and the SAPS vehicle tried to run over people and police people flipped it over. And then I also covered the second event for Senate Call when Malema got up on the stage and they switched to English to make sure that we understood, burn the Boer, burn them out, burn them out. And
kill the farmer, kill the Boer.
Yeah. And then not just that, but they switched to burn because within 96 hours, over 92,000 hectares of prime farmland in the Free State and even in Northern Cape were set afire.
And
we see, see the government with the nonsense that, well, we call it the culprits in the Free State. They were burning tires in a protest over service delivery at 4 a.m. during lockdown in the middle of the countryside on the side of a road, because we all know that's where the media goes in the Free State, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning to cover protest. Oh my goodness. It's just ridiculous. But all right. So Gavin, was he actively farming there? Was he a farm manager? Did he own a farm? Does that play a role?
He had these fruit and vegetable farm going on there on the side. But he was mainly in construction, and that's where Lucky came in. My family, everyone is in construction. And he gave Lucky a job, a place to stay and all of that. So because he was his friend, he wanted to help Lucky because Lucky was taking care of his grandmother. So, and Lucky was young. So
How old was Lucky when it was
Lucky
like,
was 30.
so wow, Gavin was 32, so they were both young,
32,
right?
yes.
Yeah, both very young. And I don't mean to pry, but I mean it's germane to the story. Nadia was his fiance. They were just a few weeks from being married. Is she still around? Is she well? Is she still in South Africa? She
yes,
migrated.
She's still part of my family.
Okay,
She's still
excellent.
part of my family. No, she didn't move on. She's not married. Like she said, her husband is in heaven. He's waiting for her. She's living with her dad. You can imagine she's scared to live alone. So yeah, but now Nadia is still part of my family. I see her as my sister-in-law or a sister because Gavin called him my froki, like my wifey. I mean, he prayed and waited for this girl for 8 years, and like
Wow.
she was praying,
He had
waiting
some
for her.
patience. He had some patience there. He waited for her for 8 years.
Yeah, no. He didn't meet her for 8 years, but he was praying, and he said, because
Oh, I
Gavin
see.
was a very good Christian, and he said to God, listen, I want this in a wife, and I want this in a wife, and I'm going to wait for that wife. When you send it to me, I will know. And then he met Nadia, and the night he met Nadia, he just phoned my mom, and he said, listen, I'm going to
This
marry
is
this
it.
girl.
This is it.
I'm going to marry her.
Wow. That part of the story is lovely. It's awesome and it's amazing. The rest of it is pretty horrific. So let's go back. So private investigators got involved. Nadia's father initially made the contact and got it going. So no response from the police. You call them up, and then the clown at the Saps police station says, "What double homicide? You're crazy. There's no double homicide. It's in the media. Hey, you've issued public comments on it." Okay, so obviously the police weren't pursuing this with any interest whatsoever. So
yeah.
The private investigation, how did that go? And did they discover things?
Well, that's where I stepped in when the captain of Boshkop police station said to me there was no double homicide. I phoned around. I phoned my family. I phoned Nadia. And then I said, listen, give me the private investigator's number. And I phoned him. I said to him, listen, this is what I'm Gavin's sister. Thank you for helping us. I need to be part of this now, because this is what happened now. And he said to me, what? I'm like, yes, this is what happened now. And I need to be involved. I need to help you any way possible. If I have to work 24/7, I'll do that, because that was my brother and his friend. So here I am. I'm a housewife. You tell me what I need to do and help you with, and we do this. And yes, a lot of Facebook searches, very, very sad pictures that I had to see, that I try so hard to keep away from my family. I don't want them to see it. During the investigation, I flew from Cape Town to Gauteng to meet up with my private investigator, and the head of forensics went to Boshkop police station, made appointments with them with a time and a date set, and then they won't pitch, and they will leave me for 4 hours in the police station laughing at me. And the last time I went there, the captain of Boshkop police station said, if I ever come back there, they will arrest me.
Okay, on the basis of what? What law are you violating? You're allowed to go to a police station. This
because,
abuse of authority is ridiculous.
But the thing is, because what they put on paper
is not
and
what
in
happened.
The media,
yeah.
I prove them wrong with their
own.
Oh,
you embarrass them. But no, my point, Shanae,
yeah,
is that they're just being arrogant asses and abusive of authority. There's no law that says you can't go to a police station repeatedly. You know, so you're a mother raising a daughter living in the Western
yes.
Cape, whose brother was brutally murdered along with his friend on a farm outside Pretoria,
yes.
Pretoria East. You are 1,000 kilometers away, and the Saps police station is 4 kilometers from where the double homicide took place. They can't
yes.
be bothered to investigate a crime that occurred within a 15-minute walk of them.
Yes.
But you fly a few hours repeatedly back and forth to deal with this. This is
yes.
unconscionable. That's my initial response.
Well, they don't care.
Apparently not. That's horrific. So you mentioned something. Let's go to that a little bit here, folks. By the way, you're listening to Chris White Reports here on the Indaba Africa channel. This is Colonel retired Chris White in Central Pennsylvania. My guest tonight, my special guest tonight, is Shanae Volzwinkel, who is a survivor of a farm attack. Her brother and his friend Lucky were brutally, her brother Gavin and his friend Lucky were brutally murdered in Pretoria East back in 2015 in a case that has not been resolved yet. And based on what we're hearing so far from her perspective is that the police seem to have no interest in this. So I want to shift the conversation a little bit now, Shanae, to you mentioned something about, you alluded to the police were involved in this. Did investigators uncover something that would indicate the police played a role in this double homicide? If so, yeah. it would make sense that they're ignoring you and blowing you off and threatening you.
Yes, the murder weapon actually came out of their storage facility.
Was this a previous illegal firearm that had been confiscated or something like that, or one of their own firearms?
A previous firearm that they confiscated.
Okay, so it was a firearm that they had taken in a commission of another crime, and they had it in storage, and that firearm got out of police storage. Was it actually in police storage at the Boskop police station?
Yes.
Okay, all right, please continue, sorry.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, well, the two that was involved in this, I made sure they don't work for their SAPs anymore. So maybe they're in different crime now without a uniform and a badge. I don't know. Or maybe they're coming for me. I don't know.
Well, it's South Africa. You never know. As you and I were talking before we went on air, I mean, I'm still very angry about the Babita Deokaran assassination in broad daylight. The only saving grace in that horrible situation was they at least waited until she had dropped her daughter off at school. But that's probably not any consideration for her daughter, just because they're just not competent enough to know where she's at. They sat and waited for her like wolves at her home and gunned her down. And the list goes on and on of what happens to people who are law-abiding, people who try to do the right thing or just live their lives peacefully like Gavin was doing and Lucky were doing. I mean, then what's really sad about this for me, Shanae, is that the police issue aside, and we'll get back to that, is that it wasn't just Gavin's life that was stolen. It was the life that Gavin and Nadia had a chance to have together, and any offspring that they might have had from that union, any children.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that will never come to pass. That will never happen. Those memories, those things. And it's not just that. It's the wider family of Nadia's family, your family, Lucky's family. His grandmother was probably apoplectic, I'm sure, because he was taking care of her. I mean, is she still surviving or has she passed since then?
No, she's still surviving. I think she goes through a lot of the same that my family's going through. The heartache and the no justice. The biggest part is no justice. We don't want revenge. We're not that type of family.
You want accountability, though, right?
Yeah, they need to be held accountable. Not them, the police, our government. Everyone needs to be held accountable for this. I mean, a president of South Africa can't say there's no farm murders.
Well, apparently Cyril Ramaphosa can tell that to Bloomberg and people drink it like it's the truth.
Well, it is the truth. I'm living proof of it. I can.
No, I'm saying he can say that and claim there are no murders and people believe it.
There's a White Cross monument with.
Well, that's what I did want to ask you. Is there, in fact, a cross at the Witkos monument up north in Mpumalanga, or not Mpumalanga, in Limpopo for Gavin? And if so, were you there when it was emplaced?
Yes. I made sure my dad received it, the East Cross. But yes, we were there. Nadia wasn't up to it. So it was myself, my mom, my dad, and my oldest brother. We received his cross and other families' crosses that couldn't be there. I mean, we just felt the need to honor those people. They didn't die in vain. So, yes, we were there to receive his cross. I try and go there every year. It's a bit difficult at this stage, especially with COVID and that was a bit hectic for me to get there. But, yes, I'm very fond of the White Cross Monument. I help where I can, raising funds for them and help. Unfortunately, with the loss of Lita Fourie, that was a very hard blow for the White Cross community. So yes, I try to be involved and spread the news of the White Cross Monument and people to get involved there.
Well, a friend of mine, you're probably familiar with the name. A dear friend of mine, Steve Hofmeyer, did go to the
Yes.
Victorious Monument a couple of years ago, which got a
I
lot of
was there with
attention.
him.
Are you serious? You were there
I
that
was a
day.
speaker on the same day as him.
I covered that live. I broadcast that day when Steve was there. That's
Yes,
incredible.
I was a speaker. I was wearing my Gavin
Okay. I
uniform.
probably saw you and just don't recall specifically, but yeah, that was very awesome. Another friend of mine who's a performer asked Steve if he would go that day, and so Steve did go. And I think Steve is doesn't go to it more often because he worries that he's a lightning rod and people will interpret it wrong. And so he went there as a favor because he was asked. But if it wasn't for the way that Steve Hofmeyer is misrepresented and portrayed by fraudulent media and social media, I think that he would probably be there every year because that's how much he
Yes.
cares.
Yes. I think you know another friend of ours, Donnie van der Westhuizen.
Well, Donnie is the guy that asked Steve to go. And yeah, Donnie's a very good friend of mine. In fact, on my last
You
trip there, I actually picked
had a
up some.
bribe with him.
Oh, you saw that. You saw that. Yeah.
Yes.
I picked up a bug in the Western Cape. In your, are you still in the Western Cape?
Yes, still.
Okay. In your neck of the woods, somebody poisoned me with their affliction. And I was fine when I left Cape Town and I flew back to Joburg, to OR Tambo. But then my stomach started giving me some problems, severe abdominal pain. And I had this bribe with Danny van der Westhuizen. And Danny had asked me to get together with him previously. And I had done it with a friend of mine, Monty Jackson. Monty and Danny are good friends. And Monty, I'd gone to visit at his home and his wife and his daughter and his mom. And then he's like, "You've got to come to our bride tonight." And I already had a meet and greet with my viewers. So I altered my plans and I went to the meet and greet, but then left and went straight in the dark, broke my cardinal rule of driving in the dark in South Africa. But it wasn't that far. And I drove carefully. It was very dark. There was no power. Load shedding. I
A
drove.
lot of load shedding.
Exactly. So I got to this place, and that's where I met Donnie for the first time. And so Donnie said, "You've got to come and have a bribe with me." So I went and had a bribe with him this last time, but boy, I was in agony and pain. And actually, I asked him if a friend of mine could come along. And she's one of the people who helped set up that meet and greet. And so he said she can come along. We got there, and I was in a lot of pain. I needed some tablets. And so a friend of mine who lives in Four Ways had given me one of his tablets for your medicine for pain, and it actually helped. So I'm like, let me go check. So I went to the pharmacy in that town, and is it Meyerton or somewhere like that? And they were closed. And so they said you got to go over to Vanderbilt, or
On the Bell Park.
not there. For Eindhoven, for Eindhoven. So went
For
over there.
Innocent,
Yeah,
yeah.
for Indigan. So I went over there and I drove in and I walked in and I talked to the pharmacy and the guy's like, "You're an American." I'm like, "Yeah, you're an Englishman in for Indigan. You think that goes over well with the Afrikaners?"
I
Anyway, so,
mean,
I mean, this is where the peace was negotiated. Not a very good peace for the Afrikaners.
yes.
Anyway, he got a kick out of that, but he gave me the meds. I went back and they actually, as I was driving back into the caravan park, because that's where the bribe pit was at a caravan park, they were driving out like, "Where are you guys going?" "We're looking for you. We thought something happened to you." I'm thinking, okay,
We
yeah, that's
actually care.
oh, they did. Of course they care, but I mean, but I was thinking, I mean, once you leave here, if I don't see you on the road, you're going to be driving all over because you had no idea. Anyway, so, but the bottom line is we had a fantastic bride. Danny is a great human being, wonderful
That's
guy.
awesome.
And of course, he asked Steve to go. So I guess you knew all the secrets there. You knew that Danny, you knew about Danny, you knew about Steve. So, and you were there yourself. But it's nice to see those with some influence and notoriety in the public step up to the plate to raise attention to this issue. I constantly discount, I don't want to say fame is not the right word, but or notoriety because that sounds bad, but awareness of me. I discount the awareness of me, my personality and what I do in South Africa. And people endlessly tell me that, "No, Chris, people know who you are. People know all over the country. You do this for people. People appreciate it." And you know, you try to be humble and I'm like, "No, that's not true." But then each time I keep going back to South Africa, people keep proving me wrong, running up to me, "Colonel Wyatt, Colonel Wyatt. I was in traffic in coming around Tigerberg Valley and a lady was sitting in an Austin Mini Cooper next to me and she starts hooting on a hooter at the robot." And I'm like, I look over, Colonel Wyatt, right there in traffic. So my point is that it's nice when people, I don't consider myself a famous person. Maybe I have some influence on aware, but when people take the time and have the concern to raise this issue on behalf of all South Africans. And that was a bit of a long stretch for me. But Sinead, were you grateful? I imagine you were that Steve Hofmeyer and Danny got involved in this.
Yes, very much so. Steve, he's very influential in South Africa, and he doesn't sugarcoat a thing. That's what I respect the most about Steve. And people don't understand Steve Hofmeyr. He's not a racist. They
No,
make him
no,
out
no.
as the biggest racist on earth, but he's not. He just stands up for what he believes in. And he still says, listen, white and black people, Indian colored, rainbow colored, doesn't matter what color, we will eventually find each other because there is good ones out there. We just need to find each other. But in South Africa, like for a black community to stand with the white community, they get murdered because they're not allowed to stand with us because then they are traitors. But they can see the ones that are standing with us, they can see what is happening and what's going to happen in South Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right about that. There's a lot of pressure on Black South Africans not to
Yes.
share. It's same. There's actually a lot of peer pressure and political pressure and threats of violence against a lot of Black South Africans
Yeah.
of voting for anyone other than the ANC. It's kind of
Oh,
like
yeah.
Zimbabwe when it comes to that. It's not the norm, but it is not unusual, is what I'm saying. So, you're right about Steve. He's a straight shooter. He also isn't shy. I mean, when I saw him at Velvedacht, when I went down for his concert in the Western Cape there, he drugged me up on stage and made me sing. Now, what I can tell you is that after that performance, they didn't need anyone to for vermin removal within 5 square kilometers because my singing frightened all the rodents away. So it was safe.
I don't think it was that bad. I don't
I
think
do.
so.
No, I was actually pretty good, but I wish I could sing. Now, Steve is incredible, though. What a performer. And Donnie is what a great guy. What a very friendly guy. What a guy that really puts all of his effort into helping people. And of course,
Yes.
he works in the security industry, which he talked about. That's so he's very familiar with the security concerns
Yes.
here. So Gavin didn't get the chance to get married to Nadia and have a life that they should have had. And the police seem completely disinterested in it. So the firearm, were there any other links beyond the firearm that you could discuss that or mention that that's enough for me. That's a smoking gun, literally, is the gun was in police custody and it wasn't in police custody. That's all I need to know. The police are obviously involved. And then their behavior afterwards makes it clear that they're trying to cover something up or they're just callous or both. But were there any other things that came out of this investigation? Because it's been a number of years now.
Yes, we actually have the suspects. I can pinpoint them. My informant is keeping an eye out on them. Actually, one of the suspects was in jail for unrelated charges, and there we saw a gap, and we said, okay, listen, let's try and get this firearm because I got the pictures of the firearms on their Facebook pages. And on a stack of money, all these firearms, and the caption was, I love my job.
Yeah, I love this is the life I've loved. I've seen these images. I mean, it's
It's
unbelievable the braggadocio of cold blooded murders.
yeah. And this one was in jail, and our informant contacted him via WhatsApp in jail, and he sent him a voice note, and this suspect sent him back, yeah. And we said, okay, let's get this murder weapon. And I said, okay, I want to buy this murder weapon or this weapon
Yeah,
because
I'm sure you weren't saying murder weapon. That's not what you were saying, but
no,
yeah.
yeah, because I well, luckily I didn't, and because I like to collect old firearms. And he said, oh, that's awesome. That's on a voice note. And he said, yes, we've got that firearm. We sent pictures of this specific firearm. And on this voice note, he was willing to sell me the firearm for 2,000 rand.
Sounds kind of high. Don't they usually go cheaper? I'm just saying. Yeah.
Well,
Maybe he's greedy.
yeah, he was greedy. And unfortunately, my detective and or my private investigator and my informant was late or missed that to pick up that firearm by an hour and a half because I think this guy spoke to his team. And when the private investigator got there, because they drop the, this is what happens. Weapons that's used in farm murders and farm attacks and all of that, they put it in safes. And that, I don't know if the Americans know what a long drop is.
You go ahead and explain it, because I have people that won't know what it is.
Okay. It's like in the rural communities, it's like they dig into the ground for them to use the toilet, because our government won't give them toilets. So they use that as a toilet. So they put all these guns in a safe and they drop them into these long drops, these toilets.
Like a pit latrine.
And when they need them, they just go and get them and then they use it again. And when the private investigator got there, the safe was lying open and the guns were gone. See, when Gavin was shot, when they moved his body, they found five live rounds underneath his body. So the one that he was fighting with, something happened there. And I think the bullets fell out. And
well, it may very well have been a revolver and it popped open and the rounds ejected or something like that in the struggle. That
was a Webley.
That is a revolver, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why it's an old gun.
So yeah, and then I would have, well,
it was live rounds underneath Gavin.
Those rounds could very well have fingerprints and DNA. Or DNA on them. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And the police have filed that DNA.
That's where the thing comes in now. Our problem is they didn't take DNA.
Oh, okay. But they did contaminate the crime scene by tromping all over it.
Yes, they didn't take DNA. I asked them for DNA, and then they said no, forensic was supposed to take DNA, and forensic says no, it's the police that's supposed to take DNA. And it was bad. And I had a meeting with the head of forensics as well. I flew to Gauteng to meet with him, with my private investigator. I actually recorded him because the autopsy was like a circus. They did a full autopsy on my living dad with his name, surname, weight, ID, everything. And my dead brother identified my dad's body.
That's how they wrote it up. That's how idiotic they are.
In official autopsy report.
Oh my goodness. That's beyond ineptitude. Listen, Shanae, let me take a second here. We'll take a breath here. We're 40 minutes in, and you've been very forthcoming and sharing what's obviously a horrific situation. And thank you for that. I'm sure my viewers really appreciate it. This is a topic that viewers have frequently asked me to cover. I had another, someone that was on the farm that was attacked that offered to come on and then backed out. And I'd never questioned that. I understand that. And so I apologize to my audience. They understood as well. So we're very grateful you come on, because these are stories that are not shared because obviously the difficulty, the pain, the concern about retribution and other things like that. So it's very generous of you. Very brave. I don't think that's an understatement, but I do want to say this, and now this is not self-promotion. I mean, I don't have 85,000 people watching this. No, but some of my troll viewers will claim this, but Fiona, who's from KZN, said that, she was responding, or she wrote to me, actually said, Colonel Chris Wyatt brings out the best in everybody. I can testify to that after my own interview with him. So I just want to take a second and say, are you doing okay? Are we good with the questions? I mean, are you okay with this, the way we're approaching this?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I just want to make sure we're still good here.
No,
okay.
I'm very vocal about this. And unfortunately, I don't sugarcoat a thing. I tell the truth. I've got the evidence black on white, like in the media as well. If they do a story about Gavin and Lucky, I don't give them thumbsuck information. It's everything black and white. There's no in-between for me, because I only have one chance to get justice. So
get accountability, it's the truth. So Shanae, what is, okay. Well, I'm sure we can surmise what the holdup is. Are they the same police captain still there 8 years later? Have new people come and gone? And if there's new people, have they shown any interest in pursuing it? Are they claiming they're overwhelmed by other murders, other homicides, other crime? I mean, it seems to me like this is not even a cold case, because it's still been investigated over these years.
Okay, Gavin, I can't get hold of Lucky's information because they won't give it to me, which is understandable. I understand that. I have Gavin's police report. His file at Boshka Police Station is 4 pages. Only 4 pages. There's no crime scene pictures in it, no autopsy reports, no autopsy pictures, nothing. The thing is now with the DNA, they confirmed in our media and the newspaper that they took DNA, and I phoned them and I said, listen, okay, I need the DNA. I need everything they left behind, these people left behind on the crime scene. I want that, and I need to go and test it privately because I don't trust you. I don't trust you. Because I questioned, where's the DNA? Where's my brother's clothes? Did you take DNA from his hands? Because he fought with the guy. It was a fight. It was a fist fight. And they just said, no, but don't worry, we will exhume him. And I'm like, exhume my brother.
Didn't why didn't you
Well,
take it when the crime occurred? I mean, why you want to exhume him later on? That's incompetence or intentional malfeasance.
I said to the head of forensics, well, good luck with that because my brother was cremated.
Oh, jeez. They didn't even know that your brother had been cremated. That shows you how little interest or concern they have in this case. I mean, I look, Shanae, I don't know if you know this about me, but I was a badge and credentialed federal law enforcement official. Now, I'm not a criminal investigator in the sense I would investigate a homicide, but I did counterintelligence and counterterrorism. So I'm familiar with forensics, I'm familiar with DNA. All of that's part of what we do if necessary to catch people who betray our country or spying our country or stop terrorists. And for me, if I'll just put a hat on as if I'm actually investigating a homicide. I would not close the case or would not have a file without knowing the end disposition of the victims, if they're buried, if they've been cremated, where they're buried, when they were cremated, certificate of death, all that stuff. You can't have a complete investigation without that information at a minimum. This is pathetic.
Well, you just sugarcoated it. It's it was bad. And now, at the end of the day, now that I want to test everything privately, we can't get the live rounds. We don't know where it is. We don't know where the holster is that they left on the crime scene. We don't know where the pliers is and the live rounds that was underneath Gavin. No one knows where it is. We can't find it. It's nowhere to be found.
I want to suggest, knowing how slow the police are, that farmers groups and rural security groups and community watches are out there doing things. I don't know the legal ramifications of it, but I would think that it would be wise for these groups to hire, at least on a retainer basis, consultants that are in local communities who have the ability to collect evidence at a scene before the police come, or when the police leave and pick up what they've left after the fact and within the confines of the law. Because clearly, now there, of course, there will be questions when it comes to prosecution about chain of custody, but you can have reputable firms that can deal with that. I mean, that doesn't mean that evidence can't be included or introduced to the trial or used as a basis to arrest someone. But I think this is something that people need to take a look at. I'm not aware of anyone doing that. If they are, that would be interesting.
No, they're not. Like Gavin's clothes. I mean, I'm a housewife. I'm not okay. Now I'm very into this true crime, and I educated myself about this, and that's. In the last 8 years, I learned so much about DNA and touch evidence and fingerprints and all of that. And that is Police 101. I didn't realize that. And if I tell them, listen, why didn't you do this? They look at me and I'm like, how did you know about this? Because I educate myself before I come here.
Well, I mean, if nothing else, all you have to do is watch CSI to know more than the SAPs do.
Oh no, I
No,
watch true crime, Dateline,
but I'm saying
all of
just
that.
watching that, you know more than the SAPs, obviously. Jeez.
Well, obviously, I know more about everything. Yeah, because I've been doing their job now for almost 8 years, and they're not paying me to do it.
No.
We don't know where that is. The sad part of everything is the projectile that went through Gavin's head, because Gavin was shot through the head. My family went back to the farm 2 weeks after Gavin was murdered. And my mom found that projectile. And
police didn't find it, but your mother did 2 weeks later. That's what I'm getting at, where people go behind after the police who've screwed everything up. Even in a contaminated crime scene, your mom found the round that killed your brother.
Yeah, and when the private investigator phoned the detective at that stage, he said, oh no, because it was a Saturday. He said, I'm busy with a barbecue. And the detective said, my private investigator said, listen, you will get to this farm right now because here's evidence that you guys overlooked. And he's like, no, I'm not going to leave my 90-year-old dad here to do a barbecue. And he said, well, I'm giving you this instruction now to come collect this evidence now.
Did they come or Gavin's no?
And I mean, like Gavin's clothes as well, I wanted to test that. And we couldn't find it. And they asked the police station, I asked forensics, because they each, this is the blame game. They play they love playing the blame game.
Yeah.
And then we did this whole investigation with Afriforum and all of those guys. And then the truth came out. Their storage facility at Boskop was full, and they burned my brother's clothes.
Okay, first off, I have a serious problem with that. Number one, besides the destruction of evidence in a case that has not been resolved, that's number one. Number two, that's the property of your family. They have no right to burn it.
Yeah, but first I said it was cremated with my brother. When they realized, I said, well, my brother's cremated. So, and then they said, okay, it's cremated with your brother. And I phoned the cremation, the guy who did the cremation, and he said, no, we have to do everything. Yeah.
No, your brother had to be cleaned up. He had to be dressed up, makeup applied, and put in presumably a suit or nice clothing. Yeah, no one gets cremated in the clothing that they're murdered. I mean, that's just that. Look, Shanae, I'm sorry. I mean, you've been living this for 8 years, and I don't mean to be a Johnny come lately, but I'm really pissed off right now. This is beyond reprehensible, and it's even amateur hour for making excuses if you're complicit in the crime. I mean, I can think up a thousand better excuses or ways to fob you off than behave in that fashion. It's horrific. It's horrific. Ugh.
Yeah, and I mean, they don't understand, even these people that kill the farmers and the farm workers and all of that, the police as well, they don't understand what they are doing to a family.
I mean, they don't care what they're doing to a family, and they don't care what they did to Lucky's family. They don't care about his go-go now being what she, I don't know, was she 60, 70, 80 years old, all on her own, you know, and no longer has that support. She's probably had to struggle, not just emotionally with the loss of her grandson, but also I would imagine financially,
it's
horrific. And of course that did it to a Black woman. So again, back to the point that they don't care. It's like the ANC, you know, they love South Africa as long as you're a cater. If you're a cater, they love you. And caterers, they're Black, white, brown, but mostly Black. The rest of the 59.5 million people, you can foot sec. They don't care about you. You're just there to serve their needs.
That's what I always say. I'm too white for South Africa, but my money is Black enough for South Africa.
Ah, that's true. That's true. Let me shift gears a second here. And this is going to come back to the things you've had to deal with here. So Joking Atheist a few minutes ago asked a question, and he said, I have a question. Justice is likely not to prevail in South Africa for your guest. Has she given thought to what her feelings are about that possibility? Before you answer, I'm going to say that I presume that you have thought many, many times that there would be no justice in this, and it probably, I suspect, fuels you and drives you to continue on, and you'll be able to answer in a second. But I want you to also, if we can, elaborate. You're raising a daughter. She was underage at the time. Now she's an adult. You were in a marriage. You had a husband. You had your own life there. You've got your parents. You've got your siblings. First off, what his question was, have you thought about it not ever being solved, and does it drive you? And then what has been the impact to your family life? I can imagine. I don't know how well your daughter knew her uncle, if she had a relationship with him.
Were so close.
This is another stolen relationship. But anyway, go ahead and talk about those things if you don't mind, Shanae.
Yes, I realize at this point, maybe this is a dead end because there's no evidence anymore to be tested. I tried so hard, and that's the thing. I feel like I failed my brother and Lucky because I just wanted justice for them. I'm very open-minded about, okay, this is not going to be solved, but it drives me as well. And if it's not solved, at least I can be a voice and tell the people, listen, this is what is happening in South Africa. It's not fun and games here. This is a reality. People say if a president of a country says there's no farm murders, there is. So then I will use my voice and do podcasts and interviews and just tell them, listen, this is what happened to us. There was no justice. But it fuels me as well to try and see if there isn't someone that can perhaps help in a way to, I don't know how. I've been wrecking my brain. I mean, this is the second or the third podcast I've been doing this week, interviews about this. Yeah, I've lost a lot during the years, but then I'm thinking, I'm still waking up every morning. My brother can't.
No, that's a good point. You know, people often ask me, they say, how are you? And I usually say, older. And they pause. And what do you mean older? I said, well, it's better than the alternative, which is under. People use, you know, that is each and every day is a blessing. Blessings that were stolen from Nadia and from Gavin. And as I said, any potential offspring they might have had. But you're saying your daughter had a close relationship with her uncle.
Yes, very, very close. She called him Booty, like brother. Mm-hmm. And I just kept telling her, because my brothers helped me raise my daughter. And so they were very, very close. Yeah, she studied psychology to help the people going through this trauma that we are going through, to help us. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, in South Africa, you don't get a job here. So, yeah, she's going overseas end of July to go and work there, which I would prefer. I don't think you're not safe anywhere, but I don't think in South Africa my daughter will be safe. Our children actually aren't safe in South Africa.
No, they're not. It's horrific what happens. I mean, you know, I reported last year on this story in Soweto, where a young man and his friend, she's a woman, but they were friends. They were just friends. And he walked her home, and then the Tutsi show up and they wanted a gang rape. They wanted sex from her. And he fought them off and held out while she was able to slide into the shack. And so they murdered him. They shot him and killed him. Yeah. And he was a brilliant student and a fine young man. And of course, he's Black, and they murdered him. And then, of course, the horrific situation with Hannah Cornelius and her friend.
That was so sad, because my daughter studies in Stellenbosch. And I just, that when she moved out of the house to Stellenbosch, because I lived in Sirius, and
they were probably very concerned. Well, I mean, Stellenbosch is known as the murder capital. I mean, and with good reason. It's for such a beautiful location. There's a lot of violent stuff that happens there. I mean, I'm not trying to frighten you. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of this.
No, but it's true.
But what happened to Hannah Cornelius? I mean, it's beyond brutal. And then the jackals laughed. They laughed. Yeah, well, I'll get to them. But they laughed about it in court. They thought it was hilarious how they destroyed this young, innocent girl's life. And I mean, the testimony was sickening. And she's like, okay, you rape me. I won't resist. Just don't kill me. And then they still bludgeon her to
everything.
Death. Yeah, they take her life. But then the young man who was with her, the colored gentleman who was a friend of hers, life completely destroyed. Yeah. Completely destroyed.
Everything. Yeah, he can't go back to study because that PTSD, it's real. It's real. Even for a family that is left behind, we go through PTSD as well. Because I get nightmares. Yeah. The other day, my mom was at a workshop trying to make a wingback chair and trying to keep busy and that. And I took her, and when I had to go and pick her up, the tools that I used, it sounded like gunshots. And I got a panic attack inside of that place because it was gunshots. It sounded like gunshots. And I said, I need to get out of here right now. Yeah. Even a smell can trigger you. It's a nightmare because I've seen everything that happened and all the reports and everything. The nightmares, that's one thing I wish we can just stop. It doesn't go away.
No.
Because that picture that was on Facebook is so embedded in your brain, you can't get rid of it. You try so hard. Well, what my dad, he turned 68 this year. In the 8 years, or almost 8 years since Gavin's murder, my dad had 8 strokes.
Oh my God.
He's in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. And now when Gavin was supposed to turn 40 years old, I went to my mom and my dad. They moved from Gauteng. They live 3 kilometers from me. So that I can go and help my mom with my dad and all of that, so that I can live close by. He had a lucid day and he was fine, and he just started crying. And I said to him, what's wrong? And he said, I just miss him so much. And then I think, now you remember on a day that you're actually not supposed to remember, but you remember. And yeah,
it's tough. It's tough.
You know, it is tough.
And it's the thing is that people that aren't unfamiliar have never experienced post-traumatic stress disorder. It's something, of course, associated with military from combat and war, but it doesn't just affect, it can happen to anybody. You can have sexual abuse survivors, rape survivors, assault victims, traffic accidents. It can be, a plane nearly crashing can cause PTSD, all sorts of things can cause. And it's difficult to deal with. And you don't even have to be the person that was directly impacted, as in the case of you. You weren't there, but it's still, you still have it. It's something tough and it's hard for it to go away. It can be dealt with and it can diminish over time, but it's probably something that's always going to be there in some sense. And that's probably the worst part about it. Now, your daughter, that relationship, did your other siblings have a strong relationship with your brother as well?
Yes. I have an older brother. I'm the middle child. So I'm the middle child.
Aren't they usually the problem children, the middle ones?
Yeah, we are.
I know, I'm the eldest, so I don't know how to relate to that.
From my oldest brother, we're 4 years apart, and then me and Gavin, we are 4 years apart. So Gavin was very special because Gavin was adopted. We got him when he was 3 days old. But we always saw him as our brother.
Well, he was your brother. So, I mean, there's nothing, there's no debate there.
That's why I say it's not just about blood and DNA.
Yeah.
My older brother, he lives in Gauteng still with his wife and 2 children. It's very difficult for him because he's not as vocal as me. He keeps it in a lot.
He's also physically very close to where it happened. And I suspect that
no.
No, he's not? Okay.
Not that close. No, he was closer to my mom and my dad's house, but not that close to where Gavin and Nadia lived. Yeah, he's not that vocal. He doesn't like us to talk a lot about Gavin because it's painful. I mean, he was on that crime scene.
Yeah.
He saw my brother there.
Lying there, yeah.
So I can understand that as well. So, yeah, I mean, of course I'm the middle child. I'm the daughter. I always try to protect my brothers as well, even from girlfriends. If I see someone likes my brother, I'm like, you don't go there. That's my brother.
Yeah. Well, that's good. You look out for him. But hey, let's take a short pause here. Hey, folks, you're listening to I've got my head deep in thought about what discussion here. This is Chris Wyatt here, and we're talking to Shanae Wolfswinkel about the loss of her brother Gavin Wolfswinkel, who was murdered and taken from us prematurely in 2015, along with his friend Lucky in Pretoria East and Boskop. It's a sad story, and another plasmod, another farm murder that has taken place, and a senseless one that left many people bereft of opportunity and experience. For instance, his fiance, who never get to spend her life that she was looking forward to with him. But I want to thank my guests. We're going to continue on here, but I want to welcome everybody that's tuned in here of late. And there's a few comments that came in here from the chat. Let's see if I can get to them very quickly here. And the one that's, I think it came from Joking Atheist, says no cure for PTSD. He's had it for years. There's good management techniques and ways to manage it. And that's what I was getting, is ways to deal with it. I mean, listen, folks, I've seen some up close and personal within arm length horrific things in my lifetime, which I don't share with people. In my case, fortunately, it's kind of like hodical. It made me, it made me harder. It's not harder as in no personality, no human feelings, but I'm able to compartmentalize that. But that isn't always the case. It's still difficult. But I want to thank everybody who's tuned in so far. Hang around with us. We're going to keep going a bit longer, as long as if Shanae is willing to go a bit longer. You want to go a bit longer? Okay, excellent. Yes. So all right. So we talked about your family and the impact, of course, and a little bit about Lucky's family as well. In the community where he lived, I don't know how. I mean, that's not exactly way out, like in the Highveld somewhere, or in Northwest.
No, family lives in Mpumalanga.
Right. So. No, not Lucky. I'm saying the farm, where the farm was at there in Pretoria East. I mean, it's not way out there, So it's relatively close to a metropolitan area. So it's sort of peri-urban. Did it have an impact on neighbors and the community around there? Was there an impact or response from them? Because oftentimes, I mean, look what happened at Senegal when Brendan Horn was murdered. Unbelievable. Brendan. Yeah, when they had like 30-kilometer traffic jam on back roads because tractors were driving for this thing, and all the people that showed up and people looking for justice at the first court hearing. Yes. So my point is, was there an impact on the community? Because there's more than... And this is, I'm not taking away from the suffering of your family and Lucky's family, but there's more than just your family and Nadia and her family and Lucky. It's the community. Was there an impact there, or did anything come about there? Anybody say anything?
No, because it happens so often in Boskop and Kameelrif and those areas that
it's just another day.
Hunting season is open, so they don't even report on that anymore.
Oh my goodness. That's even worse. That's even sadder. When I was in Zeyrust last August and I spoke to commercial farmers, about 125 commercial farmers rocked up. Surprised me. I was asked to go there by a friend who knows a lot of farmers up there. So he asked me to go and talk to farmers and kind of caught me off guard. They didn't really tell me the topic. I found the topic out moments before I got there and I made the best of it. But the upshot of that is that we had a braai afterwards, and one of the gentlemen whom I met there was an experienced former police officer, and he was one of the key members of the community patrol and the farmers' responsive unit. There was a commercial farmer attacked while I was still in South Africa after I left that week, and they responded, and he wound up getting shot. It went up under his vest, and he bled out before they could get him care. So they didn't even know that he was bleeding out. He was lying there. He said, "I'm feeling kind of cold," and 5 minutes later, he was dead. The farmer that died responding to a farm attack, they responded to an attack on a Black commercial farmer's property. They were defending Black farmers. And that's, I think this is important. And I think in the story of Gavin, it's important for people to get rid of this bullshit, racist, race hustling nonsense out of this. These are crimes committed against South Africans, law abiding, loving South Africans, regardless of their origin. And it happens all the time. And I think that that's something we need to emphasize. Do you think that's a fair point?
It is so fair. Farm murders, farm attacks, even the rapes in South Africa, they don't see color. But especially on the farms, they don't see color. And it's not South African Black people that's killing our farmers. All of my suspects is from Zimbabwe.
Interesting. I've seen an awful lot, not to denigrate Mozambique, but a fair number of people who are arrested for crimes are also coming from Mozambique. Not so many from Botswana. Most of the criminals are coming from South Africa to Botswana, the other way around. But it's weird because, I mean, when I lived in Botswana, people used to joke sardonically that, when they break into your home, if you wake up at night, it used to be that they tell you go back to sleep, and you go back to sleep and they wouldn't kill you. But now it's becoming like South Africa. If you wake up, they'll kill you, or they'll come looking for you and kill you. So it's the crime has gotten worse there, but it's not like it is in South Africa. But it's you're right. Yeah, a lot of Zimbabweans, not to pick on Zimbabwe, there's a lot of wonderful Zimbabweans in South Africa, a few million of them, but there's also apparently tens of thousands of violent criminals too.
Yes, and who summoned them to South Africa?
Juju. Yeah.
Because he's from Zimbabwe.
That's what people say. That's what people say.
No, he is.
I think he comes from the gates of hell. That's where I think he came from.
That's too good for him.
That's too good for him.
Hell is too good for him. Hell doesn't even want him.
Well, for Gavin, if people would like to remember Gavin, is there a memorial, like a Facebook page or a website or a social media account? Or we obviously, if people have the time and the energy to track up to to Limpopo, they can go to Petersburg or Polokwane there, and they can see the Witkoi's monument and see his cross, which would be very respectful. But is there something else if people want to learn more about Gavin or a place they can go and respect him? Is that up? Is that somewhere out there in the digital world?
No. We thought about doing something for him, but yeah, with my dad and his strokes and Nadia not on that level at this stage. I mean, for us, it happened yesterday. It's still so fresh for us. It happened yesterday. Everyone says move on. It's almost 8 years, almost a decade. No, it happened yesterday. In our minds, it happened yesterday. So that's why we put on the put up the cross for him. And that's where we try to go every year to honor him and other farmers. So that's actually the only place that people can go and see all the crosses. Go and pay respect to every cross there, because it's not only Gavin. I mean, the past eight days, we had eight farm murders in 8 days. People don't understand. I don't think they can comprehend 8 farm murders in 8 days. It's a farm murder a day. It's ridiculous. So I would rather say go and pay respect at the White Cross Monument to all of them who lost their lives for nothing.
Yeah, no, that's fair. No, and I wasn't trying to put you on the spot. Again, I didn't. No. This is one of the times I didn't know the answer. In another interview, I would have known if there was. And
my respect is on my arms.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I've got Gavin's name and his birthday and the year he died, and his signature on this one, and a fingerprint in a heart. Wow. Yes.
You know, it's interesting because my audience knows my aversion to tattoos. But I was recently asked about that again. I don't like tattoos. I mean, I don't hold them against people, but I just don't find them very appealing. But I was asked about it again a couple of days ago, and I said, listen, tattoos aren't my thing, but I do understand and respect people who do it to honor a lost loved one or a lost child or something like that. And your tattoos are honoring your brother.
Yes. I mean, it's not just the flower or a butterfly or something like that. It is something that's meaningful to me. And if with COVID, I had the mask with that Fister jacket with Justice for Gavin, and people will ask me and I will educate them or try to tell them, listen, this is what's going on in South Africa. You don't read about it in the newspapers, but this is going on. This is what Justice for Gavin means. And so now this jacket as well, it was made for me for the White Cross Monument. They will ask me, what is Justice for Gavin? Because we wear it on Black Mondays. That's our uniform, Black Monday. And so I'm very open about what's going on. And people don't believe you. And I think, no, man, it can't be that. It can't be that bad. There was that girl that was here on a hunting trip, and she made people aware on TikTok of what's going on in South Africa. And I felt so bad for that girl that South African said, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, word. Are you living under a rock?
Yeah.
It's happening. And they said to her, she's lying. Stop spreading false information on social media. I'm like, this is not false. She's speaking the truth.
Yeah. No, what really bothers me about this issue, Shanae, and I'll tell you straight up, is what really bothers me about this is in social media and in political circles, often portrayed as if it's some sort of right-wing white supremacist narrative. And it's not even white narrative. It's a South African narrative, and it's not supremacy anything. It's simply reporting factually what is going on in the country. You know, when Ramaphosa gave that interview to Bloomberg in New York City at the UN's conference in early 2018, I remember almost verbatim. He says, no, that because he's responding with, what about Donald Trump's tweet? And he said, no, that's he's misinformed. That's not true. There are no farm murders in South Africa. There are no farm murders in South Africa. There are no white farmers murdered. And I'm like, are you high? We have farm murders in America. Not many, thankfully, but people are remote. They're rural. Sometimes there's, you know, crime, sometimes revenge, you know, sometimes a disgruntled relative, you know, sometimes family members you got to be careful of. But to claim there are no farm murders, I mean, it's just ludicrous. There are farmers murdered murdered the world over. There are urban residents murdered the world over. It's just, it's absolutely ludicrous to make such a claim. And the media just drank it down like the perfect Kool-Aid. Oh, this is, yeah, okay. Well, Cyril's telling us there's no farm murder. So obviously Donald Trump, the racist, is lying again. You know, it's just, and that's what bothers me about this, is that it's portrayed as a political narrative when it is political in nature, because politicians are not taking action to stop it and protect South Africans. But the people trying to raise the issue are not being political. That's my take on it.
And that's the truth. Because for me, this is not a political thing with Gavin and Lucky. It's just a justice thing. But our police, our SAPS, our government, they're supposed to protect and serve us. They're the ones that are murdering us.
Well, yeah, it looks like that's the case here. And if they're not directly murdering, although we know we've had instances of that, we've caught and we've identified law enforcement and government officials murdering people directly, including members of parliament accused of murdering. But when they're not doing it, they're certainly facilitating it by loaning out, renting their sidearms, or letting people use, you know, confiscated weapons, like which is the one used to murder your brother. There is a comment here from a joking atheist who has one of the coolest usernames on YouTube, the joking atheist. And he said that if it was 8 politicians in 8 days, imagine how angry the press would be and how angry the media would be and how the politicians would be up in arms. They would be up in arms.
It would be all over the world.
Yeah.
Yep. And they won't deny that thing.
And if they all happen to be black politicians, of course, it would be white supremacists who murdered them.
Yeah, then it will be apartheid.
Yeah, well, we know that Jan van Riebeck is a terrible, disreputable person. Oh. And his reach is amazing. I mean, he's like one of the biblical figures. I mean, apparently Jan is still alive 360 years later. He's still.
I mean, really, I don't know where he's hiding. I mean, it's like the never-ending story with Jan van Riebeck, but yeah.
I've heard that he has a house in Brockenfell. I'm just saying.
I need to get that address. It's not far from me.
It's right around the corner from where Joe Emilio lives, so I can give it to you.
Oh, okay. Your WhatsApp.
Sorry, I had to put a lighthearted moment on there.
But, I know. Jan always gets the blame.
It's funny because they blame Jan, but the architect of separate development, which morphed into a lot of racial policies, was Hendrik Verwoerd, a Dutchman. And he barely gets any blame. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, should blame or not blame, but they barely mention Hendrik Verwoerd. But boy, they remember Jan van Riebeck, who, by the way, was colored. He was mixed race. And one of his parents was from Malaysia, Indonesia.
I don't know. I don't think they realize it, because most of these thugs that do this stuff, they weren't even born during the apartheid era.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that's the thing with the nonsense, and we get a little bit away from the topic at hand, but just it's related. The nonsense we constantly hear about, legacy of apartheid, historically disadvantaged. Over half the population of South Africa was born after the ANC began running the country. These people are products of ANC macroeconomic and political policies, not apartheid. Now, yes, there are some legacies of it, but some of them were legacies that served. You know, you had a functioning power utility that could expand. You had airlines at work. You had trains at work, and all that's gone now. But the bad legacies of apartheid, there are some impacts of that. But, you know, it's interesting, Sinead, because people they make these arguments and they act like everything's universal. Like, just because something is a certain way, it affected everybody. But here's a funny thing. And you've heard of, I imagine, Dr. Zwelin Mkhize, the former health minister. Have you heard of that guy? He was implicated in the Digital Vibes case. Now, he's a doctor of medicine, not a doctor of political science, you know, like, or a doctor of education like Dr. Jill Biden, you know, but an actual medical doctor. So Zwelin Mkhize, I was quizzed some of my guests, but I won't do that to you. So he was born in South Africa, attended university in South Africa during apartheid, by the way, went to medical school in South Africa, became a practicing physician in South Africa, all before 1994. Last time I checked, he's a black man. So I'm not saying that all black folks had access to that sort of education, but clearly some did. And the living proof is Dr. Zwelin Mkhize, who never went abroad like Thabo Mbeki did. He stayed in South Africa and he became a medical practitioner in the country. And, you know, so it's just, it's fascinating how people, the same thing with farmers. I mean, if they talk about your brother's murder, they probably barely mention or neglected to mention the death of Lucky. I'd almost guarantee that in the coverage without even seeing it.
Well, I make sure they mention Lucky.
No, you do. But I'm saying, their inclination would be to just brush over and not even mention Lucky had been killed or barely talk about it.
One of their own, they won't talk about Lucky. It's one of their own. They have to justify why is one of their own killed.
Well, he wasn't one of their own. That's why they killed him.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, listen, Shanae, this is something that's ongoing for you. I will be back in South Africa in August is the plan. It's not too far away. And I do meet and greets. If you and your daughter are available, if you'd like to come meet and greet, I invite you. If you'd like to meet privately, I would be happy to do that as well.
I would love to meet you.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I would love to meet you.
I'd say it's a date, but it's not a date. We'll make a date. But
we'll make a date.
We'll make
just
it. We'll
bring
make
your winter clothes.
Well, like South Africans say, "Mboa makam plan." So we'll make a plan.
We'll make a plan. Okay. We make a plan.
Exactly. So, is there anything you'd like to leave us with before we wrap up? I'm not trying to rush you out. We can go a bit longer, but
No.
Yeah. So, is there anything you'd like to share about the whole situation or about things in general in South Africa? Maybe I don't know. Once you're off the air, I'm going to tell people that there's a message of hope here. It's to show that loved ones that are impacted by this, they continue to remember, and that's important. But is there anything you'd like to share with the audience? I give you the floor.
I just think the people must realize that if someone visits South Africa and they report on social media what's really going on in South Africa, the facts, the truth. Yes, there's farm murders. Any color will be murdered on a farm. It's not fake news. It's reality. It's the truth. I'm not sitting here just to be on your channel. I have files and files of proof that it is happening. We don't hear it in the media. We won't hear it from our government. But it's the truth. It's a reality for our South Africans. Even our gender-based violence, it is a reality in South Africa for us. It is so bad in South Africa. And that's why I'm so happy that my daughter is going overseas. I mean, it's not safe everywhere, but in South Africa especially, it is not safe. So she must go and live her best life. Because she won't have an opportunity to live her best life in South Africa, like most of the children in South Africa. Because we are going downhill very fast, especially with a new president on the American side.
Sorry, I just shaking my head about Joe Biden. That's who you're talking about here. It's
look what happened to Zimbabwe.
In Zimbabwe having another election here, and they've just put a $20,000 U.S. deposit requirement to declare your candidacy to keep people from running for office. But let me bring a few comments in here from very considerate comments here. Debbie Morey says, brave lady, with hugs and hearts. Thank you for your sharing. Joking Atheist says, is sharing this with Fiona, who lives in the UK now. I interviewed her recently, Fiona. She goes by White Zulu. And it says, grief shows us we are still alive and able to continue life. Their memory is on our memory of them is on their behalf. So that's, he gets some typos there. But and then he typed this earlier, Joking Atheist, but I didn't get a chance to bring it in. So he kindly pasted it again so I wouldn't miss it. He said, I'd like to say to your guests, Gavin not getting justice is and never will be her failure, but rather a failure of the country that is failing everyone. And I echo that 100%. I'm pretty sure you realize that you've not failed. I know you said you feel like you failed, but you obviously haven't failed, Gavin. You've gone way above and beyond what a private citizen should be doing to get justice and get accountability. It's just unfortunate the system South Africa has. And I hope that millions of South Africans, particularly Black South Africans, wake up to this reality in 2024, get off their asses, their bums, register and go vote these criminal reprobates out of office. Yeah, but
and that's what I said in a previous podcast, as America needs to stop them sanctions South Africa. They must sanction South Africa. Immediately, because especially now with what's going on that side, it's going to get worse for Americans.
No, it has gotten much worse, demonstrably worse here, where suicide rates, murder, rape, violent crime are up almost all over the country.
I'm keeping an eye on that.
Yeah.
I predicted this.
Yeah, no, well, then you were like Senior von Rendsburg. You were prophetic and ahead of your time if you predicted this.
Senior Wolfswinkel.
There, Senior Volkswagen. There you go. But yeah, no, it's really sad, and I'm heart sore about what's happening in my country. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm contemplating a run for political office to see if I can change the trajectory, at least locally. Leilu popped in here and said, "Hi, everyone. A truly remarkable guest. May your endurance go from strength to strength. I'm so sad. South Africa's like a runaway train." Except it's not, Leilu, because they've stolen all the cables and the tracks. There's no trains.
And there's no electricity here as well,
Yeah,
so
so yeah,
they
and
take away all the electricity.
if people want to claim that that's fake news, I have the video and the photographs of the missing cables, the dug up holes where they dug up the communication cables, and the missing rails in Gauteng province up north towards Brits, just around Brits. I have the photographs of it. I've been there. I've filmed it. I've lived it. I've seen it. It's shocking. Stephanie Hatzemichael, I haven't seen you in donkey years. Where you been there, young lady? Decline is real. The pain is real. The farmers is real. It's a real crisis. You're right, Stephanie. Good to see you again. And sanctions hurt the poor and enrich the politicians. I saw that during apartheid. Yes, Fiona, that's true. But there's a difference between sanctions and then enriching people with privilege. Right now, for instance, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, we grant South Africa a privilege of not paying import duties to come into our country with goods, which is enriching already rich people. Simply applying the 2% tariff is not going to cost jobs from South Africa. It's just going to take some money out of the pockets of fat cats who are getting away with what they're getting away with. But yeah, I know, I appreciate that. So, Shanae, listen, thanks for your persistence on TikTok and trying to link up with
Thank
me. We had a bit of a headache getting sorted out there, but I think you've got some.
load shedding.
Yeah, but you've also got some life events going on right now that you're sorting out and dealing with. And so, but we got through that, and we've got you on here. I want to say that I really enjoyed the conversation. I mean, you
Thank
know,
you.
sounds weird given the topic, but it's lovely to meet you and to hear about your brother and hear about the love for your brother and the relationship your daughter had with her uncle and Lucky and Nadia and all of that stuff, and really angry and pissing me off about officials and their response and their mishandling of things, which was probably all intentional. You know, we had a case here in America, very famous back in the 1970s, of an Army Special Forces doctor who murdered his wife and family at Fort Bragg and got away with it
I
because,
know about that.
you know, that case, because we didn't practice proper forensic techniques in the US military at the time. They did on rare occasions, but there was no systemic process. As a consequence of that, the Criminal Investigation Division, CID, was formed. And now we handle those crime scenes differently. But it was raining at Fort Bragg. All the MPs walked, military police walked through the house, destroyed all the evidence. And the guy got away with the murder for years. And then he was tried in a civil case and he
It
finally
was
went to
tried
jail.
again. Yeah,
Yeah, he went to civil. But see, because that's not double
Double
jeopardy. It's not double jeopardy. The military can try you and the civilians can try you. The military, he got off. The civilians, his father-in-law finally got him because he was flaunting
Another
the
father
wealth.
lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks,
So.
Dateline.
You know that story. But yeah, no, anyway, so thank you so much. Bye bye, donkey.
But
It's
thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it and having me on your channel. And thank you to all your guests. I hope you guys are safe on that side. And I pray for you guys. Because I don't want to happen to you guys that's happening here. It's very sad, and it's life changing.
life
Your
altering. I
life
think
is never the same.
that's the phrase
Your
you're looking
life
for.
is never
Life altering.
the
Yeah,
same. Yes,
it's
your life
not.
is never the same. And you see life differently as well.
Well, people keep coming with comments. Let me just a couple more here before we
Okay.
part. So, Joking Atheist said, parting joke, what's the difference between a good lawyer and a great lawyer? A good lawyer knows the law. A great lawyer knows the judge. Sad part is that's true in South Africa. And apparently with the Department of Injustice in America, Hunter Biden, that's the case too. And then Fiona said, please thank your wonderful guest for sharing her story with us. She's a very brave lady. And I
Thank
salute
you.
her. And speaking of salutes, I was intending to do that, but she's mentioned salute. Listen, as a 36 and a half year former soldier and rising from private to full colonel, what we do in uniform is we salute seniors or superior officers. I say senior, that's a better term, not superior, because nobody's superior to us, but senior officers is a sign of respect, a custom that grew out of medieval knights, showing that their hands were free of weapons, that, you know, here's my hand, but it grew into a salute. And I don't, Gavin didn't serve in uniform, did he? In the military?
No.
No, okay. I didn't suspect you did, but in my case, it doesn't matter. It's when people become paying members of my channel as a courtesy, as a colonel. How often you get a colonel salute you? I salute them, and for his life and for your efforts, I salute Gavin and you, and that's what this is for.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
That means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
Sorry, I get a little emotional.
It's
Anyway,
thank you.
all right. Now I've made her
Thank
cry. I've made her cry.
you.
So, anyway,
I'm
Sinead,
trying to not to cry
no,
so
you've
that
done a brilliant
that
job, and I
feeling.
went and screwed it up at the end. That wouldn't be the
No, it's
first
fine.
time.
No, is it? No, it was so
Anyway, but
special.
no,
I really, really.
it's genuine. So, it's I wish he's a handsome bloke. He might have got me to go to the other side of the fence. I mean, he's good looking,
No. He had his wife chosen, so no. He
Anyway,
loved his wife.
no doubt about it. So best wishes to you and your family, and I hope
Thank
that
you
your
so much,
father.
and you guys too.
Thank you.
And
I
I
hope
hope
your
God blessed you and your channel and your family, and just be safe.
Yep, we
That's
will be.
all that I
And
pray.
I hope that your father has some pleasant, lucid moments as he struggles, as he goes forward, has good memories, and not just the bad ones.
Yeah, I hope so too. But thank you so much. And thank you for this interview. I really, really loved it. It was so much fun.
All right. Well, thank you
On
so
a
much.
sad note
Yeah,
as
I know.
well.
It was very pleasant. That's probably a better word. Okay. All
Yeah,
right.
I mean, you can't just sit and cry the whole time. But yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
But thank you so much. You guys must have a lovely evening. Or, girl, it's almost 12 o'clock at my side. So, but guys must
That's
have a
good.
lovely, lovely day further.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Chanel. I'll let you drop off now and I'll wrap up. Thank you so much. Bye-bye, ducky.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Donkey, bye.
Bye. All right, folks, that's Sinead Wolfswinkel. Let me make sure she get her off there. Oh, she got herself off. Okay, cool. All right, well, thank you all.